This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a people and plants dialogue hosted by the Sophie Health Team with founder Kaveh Mamari, herbalist Pamela Spence, and evangelist Vincent Boone. Together, we explore the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age, and hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.health, reconnecting people and plants.
A very warm welcome to the show this week. Thanks for tuning in to our conversations about managing stress and the common issues of poor sleep and anxiety, the Sophie way. We're excited to bring you guest speakers who've inspired us, people from the world of medicine, plants and beyond, to examine different approaches to health and well-being. And our hope is that by having these conversations between people who would normally never meet, we can showcase new approaches and open up new areas of healthcare, some that are pillars of the Sophie.health system and can support us all in new and profound ways.
Now, if this is your first time tuning into the show, you can find out about the Sophie.health mission by visiting our Listen on Demand page on the UK Health Radio website. Episode 1 explains who we are and what we do, and from there you can see the list of all of the beautiful distinguished guests we've already had. We cover topics from wild food to keyhole surgery, from managing your energy to compassion in medicine. Really, at Sophie, we have a very special vision for health, and we have created a combination of plant extracts, an app, and an online community to support people going through stressful times.
In our last episode, we welcomed back Dr. Stephen Dahmer, integrative physician, to tell us some of his fascinating stories of meeting plants while traveling the globe and what he learned about the real art of healing in Indigenous communities. If you missed it, do go to our Listen on Demand page to catch up.
Before we introduce you to this week's guest speaker, regular listeners will know that we've created a page specially for UK Health Radio listeners who'd like to join the Sophie community. And we have a special discount code for you, which is Radio50, and gives you a 50% discount off the price of a Sophie pod. You can find all of this information at join.sophie.health/radio, or just go to the UK Health Radio homepage and click on our banner to be taken directly there. So this week, we're delighted to welcome herbal storyteller and author Amanda Edmiston to the show.
A dyed-in-the-wool storyteller and former student of herbal medicine, Amanda Edmiston comes from a long line of storytellers, plant people, writers and artists. She's always been fascinated by stories and says she particularly loves how they reveal the ways we connect to each other and our environment and provide a safe place to explore elements of our lives.
Over the past 12 years, Amanda's storytelling has taken her on an incredible journey. She's woven words for the Chelsea Psychic Garden in London, taken Scottish folklore and regional plant use and legends to the National Museum of Rural Life and the Asmodean Museum in Oxford. She even created new fairy tales to share experiences of staff and patients at a former mental hospital, the Crichton Trust, as well as a shared historical secrets concealed within stories at the Royal College of Physicians and Surgeons in Glasgow.
She has collected stories and memories of plant use from across rural Scotland. Her recent project, The Very Curious Herbal, was inspired by the work done at the very end of the Scottish witch trials by the first woman to publish a herbal, Elizabeth Blackwell. It leads participants through a tangled world of fairy tales, folklore, magic, social history, and herbal remedies using storytelling techniques to explore tastes, look at traditional remedies, and share stories.
Now, Amanda's first book, A Time Traveler's Herbal, is published by David and Charles and is a beautifully illustrated journey through time and plant lore. Amanda recently founded the Botanica Fabula School of Herbal Storytelling and runs workshops both live and online. We've just seen the copy of our latest book, and it's absolutely beautiful. Evie, what are your thoughts on meeting Amanda today?
I mean, first of all, hi, Amanda. Thanks for coming on today. It's really, really great to have you. As we can see, you have a very interesting and, complex kind of background. But personally, I'm really intrigued as to what herbal storytelling kind of entails. It sounds like fascinating to me, but I'm not really sure what it's about. But I'm sure it's something that our pioneers and our listeners will really enjoy hearing today. I'm especially excited for the end of our show, where you will be giving us a story about one of our very own plants used here at Sophie. So yeah, we have a really fun episode this week, and I can't wait to listen in with our viewers.
Thank you for such a lovely warm welcome, and I'm delighted to be here.
Yeah, Amanda, welcome to the show. Gosh, what a fascinating route to a very unique profession, right? It's
Indeed.
combining storytelling and, and herbs. So, obviously I'm quite used to Pamela telling stories as well, actually, every week. Always enriching our knowledge about, the kind of like, plants that she's looking at. And yeah, now we find another, genuine storyteller. So can you tell us a bit about, kind of like, how you got here, kind of like the origin, like how did you, were you a writer always and now plants? I heard you were in the same course as Amanda as well. So yeah, clearly it started somewhat later in life, potentially.
I guess it started really early on, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
This was probably the thing I was from the very beginning. One of my earliest memories is of going into my grandmother's garden and her telling me about how the plants could be used. I remember her getting me to gather handfuls of mint and getting me to squeeze it and smell it, to take back into the kitchen to chop up to make mint butter to go on new potatoes. But her telling me about how mint could soothe the digestive system. But alongside my grandmother's knowledge of plants and gardens and cooking, my grandfather was a sculptor and he was a storyteller by nature. Everywhere we went, he would tell you about the stone he was carving, about the history it had seen, about the folklore and the mythology of the places that we traveled. And the whole time he carved, he would weave stories, and this kind of came together like it was a basic, it was always there in my life. And then my mum, who started off being a textile artist, then became a storyteller. She was a professional storyteller for about 35 years. And I hadn't thought of going down that route. I'd always written, I'd always loved stories, art, and plants. And I went off to study herbal medicine, as Pamela mentioned, and then had my eldest daughter, who's now 17, and thought, I don't want to go into clinical practice. My path feels like it's somewhere else. And it was at toddler group with my little girl, who was then two. And our toddler group was fantastic. We were in a very diverse part of Glasgow, and we had people from lots of different countries speaking lots of languages, grandparents, parents. And I thought, what am I going to do to bring these people together? We were all volunteering to run sessions with the children. And I thought, I'm going to do that. I'm going to tell stories about plants, and we'll get the children outside and we'll get them smelling the plants. And then, if they don't speak English as their first language, they will still get the sense of the story and of the plants. And I took them out and we went into the garden and I shared stories. And suddenly we were getting conversations started. People had the same use for plants, regardless of their culture and their background. They knew similar stories. And I guess that I suddenly realized that this was something that resonated with a lot of people. And I was fortunate enough then that the garden that I was working in with the toddler group as a volunteer, they got funding. to support me to do more sessions. And then Chelsea Physic Garden, who you mentioned down in London, who are one of the oldest physic gardens in the world, was the home of the Worshipful Society of Apothecaries, asked me to go down to London. And I guess kind of it all kind of continued from there. It resonated with people. And I love doing it. And it just felt like I'd found my thing and I'd come home. So that's where it all started. So yes, a little later in life, but also it was there from the very beginning. You know, sometimes I feel as a grown up, you go back to the thing that you loved most as a child.
Yeah, no, I can, you know, really imagine that. And again, well told. Yeah, you take us on that journey where you're sort of like with your grandparents and your mother as well. So yeah, no, storytelling is clearly, you know, in the blood.
It really is. And I mean, you know, there is that saying that people are storytelling animals. You know, stories are what grab our attention and draw us in, and they make us feel nurtured and comfortable and in a safe place. They provide a safe place for us to look at complex feelings and journeys and emotions, because it's not happening to us, it's happening to someone in a story, but you can take that away and learn from it. So I love that magic that stories have.
And they're also a really great way, particularly, I think, in the herbal tradition of, and we've spoken to quite a few people on the show who've travelled and worked with plants around the world and Indigenous communities. It's a really amazing repository for knowledge, isn't it? The time before people would write things down, and even, or if their culture chose not to, but, you know, teach it by story. One of the things that we talked about, Amanda, when we were preparing for the show, was the fact that you were talking about online communities. And as we know, Vincent, that is his area of expertise, and he's been involved in some of the biggest online communities, you know, that are around in his time. And you were talking about online communities and how for you, they have created this incredible new home for these really ancient stories. Can you talk to us a bit about that and how you've linked with online work?
I'd love to. I think it's a really powerful thing. And I think it's something that some people have found a little too easy to shy away from. But I feel like we've always thrived in community. And for thousands of years, that communities have been close, or at least on corridors and paths of trade, but the stories and the need for community still exist, but our communities have changed, you know, as you touched upon, and I love the potential to go into communities, which I do a lot, work with a lot of rural communities across Scotland and further afield. And then I use storytelling to talk to people about their memories, their anecdotal knowledge, the local legends and folklore of place and of the plants that they live with and near. And then I use those stories with people's permissions, obviously, build them into existing legends with new narratives sometimes sprinkled through. But then I rely on the use of online communities because, you know, as the world shifts and changes, there is that need to find those communities. And for me, online networks have provided a wonderful sense of still being held within that village of people that believe and trust and share knowledge and information and work together, but are maybe more geographically spread out. And so it started developing inevitably, as it did for many people during COVID, that I went more into the world of the online community. And I now have created some of the work I started in 2020, and formed online courses with them. But we all come together on social media platforms. Occasionally we meet up in real life. I was recently in Hudson Valley, and we had people that have joined online communities and create situations I've created over the last few years turned up in real life. So that was fabulous. But yeah, the online community and that taking of that ancient knowledge that was really safely held and cherished in small traditional communities and then sharing it in those new communities, I think is a really, really vital part of my work, you know. And I find it super supportive as a practitioner, you know, and really important to me.
I think it's one of the phrases that you use, which if people aren't used to hearing about work like you do, is about story collecting. And that's a big part of it. Can you just talk a little bit about story collecting and what that means?
Yeah, so I'm going to give a little example. One of my favourite stories, and about a herb that I really love. I was working up in a rural community that's not so far away from me, but is easily isolated. It's geographically quite hard to get to a lot in the winter. It suffers from rock falls. And so it's had a history where it gets cut off quite easily. And it's been great at hanging on to its stories and its folkloric knowledge. So I go through written histories and archive material. I find out as much as I can about the legends of place and the botany and geography of the area. Some of that's accessible through museums and archives, libraries. I then take some of those stories, and I was working with this community for a while, older people in the community, and I usually do a mixture of setting up a workshop. Some people are invited along. Some people, like this one wonderful woman I was speaking to who was 93, someone said, you need to go around and speak to Molly, who's 93. She knows great stories. I tapped on Molly's door. I said, hello, my name's Amanda. You know, I took around biscuits. I took around cookies and cake and sort of said, hi. People have said, come in. She said, I'd love to tell you a story. People love a chat, you know. People love to connect. And so some people I do that with. But over this project, story collecting in Killin, I talked to a few people, and one of the stories I love most, about a plant I love most, emerged, which was that during World War One, when the young men were called up to go and fight, the one man that whose son I spoke to told me how his father had been sent to see the wise woman of Killin, who lived at the edge of the village, as story archetypes do. And there she gave him a sprig of St. John's wort, found by accident, as is the way of St. John's wort if you're going to use it for good luck. And she gave it him and told him to put it in his Bible, and it would bring him back safe from the front. And this man I spoke to, the gentleman I spoke to, said my father then carried that St. John's wort into the battlefield, came back safely, and then went off and drove ambulances during World War II, still with the St. John's wort, Hypericum perforatum, in his Bible, and came back to that day. He said the plant had done it. I then take that story and, you know, connect it up with a few other legends. I found another story. It turned out it wasn't just one wise woman. There were many, but that is, as they say, yet another story. We'll be down a maze, a rabbit warren of tales. But yeah, so I literally go and ask people, and I collect stories, I record them, and I ask if I can share them, and then take them out into the wider community.
I've just had a sudden thought as you were telling that story, Amanda. I'm just wondering why St. John's wort. So I know that there's lots of legend around. So for people who are not herbalists, when we study herbal medicine, if you did the kind of degree that we did, you learn a lot of the folklore and the history around it as well. This is part of what you learn. And for us as herbalists starting out, quite often it's where we link in with community, because you tell little bits of story and people love it. Not on anything like the level that Amanda does, but little snippets of story, like I do in the Herb of the Week, like you were saying earlier. I just really thought, though, St. John's wort has all sorts of mythology around it being protective. But see if they'd get taken a fresh sprig of the plant. If they put it in the Bible, it's always, you have to have the Bible there to kind of, you know, kind of sanctify and Christianize this old pagan way, right? It's always got to be there somehow to make it okay. But if that had been properly pressed and squeezed rather than dried, red oil would have come out. So it would have been a bit like the plant bleeding rather than the person. I'm just wondering if that had anything to do with it.
Well, absolutely. And the other interesting, you say that, it's brilliant bit of timing there. But you, if you've heard the next story I collected in Berlin, someone said there wasn't just one wise woman, there were many wise women. Everyone knew, because it was a small community, that every family probably had someone, or at least a neighbour, who had a degree of skill and knowledge about plants. But this next story I discovered that said that the person that had given them the plant didn't tell them to use it as a good luck charm, but to told them if they got wounded on the battlefield to use it as a wound healer. And then, of course, I find out that someone else suggested they took the herb, which, if they struggled on the battlefield, connecting it up with that antidepressant property. And so, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the whole folklore behind St. John's Wort goes into that, as you will know, but for the non-herbalists amongst you, say that the herb bleeds with the blood of St. John when the devil stabs it with his pitchfork, and it heals the plant. But that healing property in that deep purple red oil, certainly a handful, if you're going into a dangerous situation, would not be a bad idea. Yeah. It might not just be a good luck charm. It might be, it might have many different ways that you might need to use it.
Absolutely. Not a bad plant to take into a battle with you. That's definitely
absolutely
for sure.
And
if anyone
not.
Hasn't done it before and doesn't know what we're talking about, take the stem of St. John's Wort or the yellow flowers, rub them between your fingers, and they will turn red like blood. That is what we're talking about. Quite a magical plant. Amanda, thank you so much. There's so much more to unpack. We barely even started. And we really look forward to doing that right after this commercial break.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. A quick reminder before we dive back into the conversation to visit our special landing page for UK HR listeners at join.sophie.health/radio for all the information you need to join us, and also your special 50% discount code on a pod called Radio50. So before the break, we heard Amanda talking about, you know, how she grew up and found storytelling and herbalism through her grandmother in her garden, showing her different plants and telling her what she could do with it. Also her grandfather, an artist, a sculptor, and a real storyteller, gave her this love of storytelling. And not only that, like folklore and mythology of places she visited were explained to her. Her own mom was a big storyteller as well. So it really is in your blood, Amanda. And in Glasgow at a toddler group, seeing all these diverse cultures coming together, she thought, gosh, you know, how do I get people talking? And came up with an idea of connecting people through plants, right? So everywhere in all the different worlds, in all the different countries, there are plants and people have stories around that. And so kind of like it grew from there and kind of brought Amanda back to her roots of storytelling. And now since 2020, right, COVID period also includes online communities in her work, and find that that's also a great home for ancient stories. But not only there, she actually goes out and collects stories from people and folklore in rural areas, where she, you know, holds workshops and actually asks people, you know, for their stories. And she shared a few a moment ago, which were fascinating and fun to listen to. Welcome back, Amanda. I'm just sort of thinking, like, why do you think, herbal storytelling works so well, right? In binding people together.
There are several reasons for that. I think it's you end up with a multi-sensory experience. So I often invite people to taste the herbs that we are having a story about during the story, or maybe try a little bit of the essential oil and inhale the scent. I have almost a treasure trove of found things or handmade objects. So I have nettle paper, for example, and I will ask people to take the nettle paper and maybe write a few words of their own to take home with them during a workshop. It becomes quite immersive. And I think that the potential for this not to just be a regular story, but something where you can taste and feel and smell the story makes it draws people in. And I also think that I think secretly between you and me, and there's nobody listening, is there? I
No,
can tell you.
that's
I think the plants have found a way to get us to listen. I honestly think the stories have been there for thousands of years. One of the first stories I tell is over 5,000 years old. The plants have found a way to get us to listen. And we kind of feel this, a lot of us. It's an innate part of our connection to the natural and environment. And they know we like hearing stories, so they whisper stories to us. And when we hear those stories told out loud in our own languages, we have that sense of belonging and connection. So I really feel like that's an important part of it. I also feel like, you say, why does herbal storytelling work? You kind of filtered that in there. It works in the same way creative visualization does a little for athletes. If you start saying to someone that valerian will support your nervous system and lead you into a dreamy sleep, you're already imagining being in a dreamy, restorative sleep as those words are whispered to you. And your body has already taken that deep inhale of breath in, and that beautiful valerian floral aroma kind of hits you. And you're halfway there already. Your cells are already starting to restore. So I kind of think there are lots of reasons why it works for me.
Yeah, I
It's
think
amazing.
a lot of people also have an experience, right, with plants have been told, when you were a kid or whatever, right? Got a stingy nettle. What's the leaf that you put on there
A
to
dock
help you
leaf.
with a stingy nettle, Pamela? A
Dock
dock
leaves.
leaf. That's it. That's it. Yeah, so it's things like that that you already have an experience with, and I guess when you're feeling the plant and you're smelling the plant while the story is being told, you're kind of becoming part of the story, right? I think they've always wanted to
Absolutely.
make smell-o-rama, right? Cinnamon with smells. It's kind of like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I've literally done that on one event. I've been telling a story in an old cinema, and sort of said, "Oh, smell-o-vision." I've left little packets of herbs on everyone's seat, and I've said, "Now open up the packet of herbs and smell as I tell the story with visuals on in the background." It's fabulous. I think it's the way to go. And some of us are word people, but some of us have different ways of learning and understanding and engaging. And I think that mixture of taste and smell and all the other things allow that to happen for more people than just talking.
I think it's amazing that you just said a little while ago that the plants are whispering to us and calling us. And do you remember, every listeners and Vincent and Evie, that's exactly what Rosemary Gladstar said when she was on, isn't it? She talked about the plants have found a way to call us to them, and that's almost exactly what you just said. And that just reminded me of something we talked about prior to the show, Amanda, which was that, That wherever you find the same plant around the world, I think nettle was your example, wherever nettles are found, the nettle stories are uncannily similar.
Absolutely. I've just been recording that for my online course, the next one that's coming out, the spring and summer one. This morning was the story of nettles, which I'm sure you will know, where the girl weaves and sews nettle shirts to save her brothers from an enchantment. They've been turned into swans in the Northern European version. But that story literally crops up in dozens of different countries in different forms with different variations, which I think is so exciting. There are similar stories of weaving this fiber from this slightly, you know, I mean, it's a resilient plant, should we put it that way, nettle. It's, you know, it doesn't lend itself to being worked particularly easily, but there this story crops up time and time again with in different countries, but wherever nettles grow, and as you know, nettles grow nearly everywhere.
Everywhere that there's human activity is how I learned it. I don't know whether that's accurate or not, but that's what I was taught. Yeah, absolutely.
And we need them. They are such
an
important
plant.
They're cleansing. They're remineralizing. They do wonders for people, and they also turn our waste into something that we value and treasure. You know, they put up with a lot from us nettles.
They do, and they also we would have used, well, in Scotland at least, we would have used them to make paper, like you said earlier. They were our linen because we didn't have hemp this far north. You know, we've looked at nettles in one of our Herbs of the Week and looked at all the different ways that they're useful to us. So that's really fascinating about the stories being the same around the world. We'd love you to tell us a story, Amanda. So we've got about 6 or 7 minutes left until this section of the show. I wonder whether, you know that we've been working with lots of plants, but the key ones for us have always been valerian and then passion flower, passiflora, and then ashwagandha more recently. Can you tell us a story about one of our plants?
I certainly can. And in fact, it's a story that I've been working with for a while. I think it's probably still growing. It's not found its final position, but it's wandered into the chapters of the Time Traveller's Herbal because it concerns Hertha. Now, Hertha is a somewhat overlooked Nordic Norse goddess. She's said to be the Earth Mother, and she gives birth to Freya and Freyr, and then seems to be lost. She finds her name crops up in different forms, but she is the lost mother figure. I kind of like to find her whispers in Scottish mythology, because in Scots lore, we're all too familiar with the Caiach, the bringer of winter. As she bangs her blackthorn staff onto the ground, the land freezes. When she lays back down to sleep, Brugia, her granddaughter, gets up to dance, birch maidenesque. But where is the mother? Lost in this story. Well, I think the mother vanished somewhat when the witch trials began. Nitnivin might have been her name, but the invisible mother is always there, and thus it is with Hertha, because there was one day I was lying down by the riverbank in a meadow not so far from here. The dancing pink and creamy flowers of the valerian all around, and I heard a whisper. Somewhere amongst the trees, just off to the left of the patch of grass I was lying in, I could hear the sound of a deer. Now, looking up, I wondered where the deer was. It didn't seem to be visible, but I could hear its tread. But it wasn't quite in sight. Then I smelt hops. Now, hops and valerian are a heady mix at the best of times. Maybe I was dreaming. I do not know. But then I saw something else move, the figure of a woman, coming from where the black pond just beyond the beech trees behind me was, a deep black pool that said to be inhabited by a shadowy figure. Some of the legends whisper that this might be the Earth Mother herself. Maybe she travelled when the Norse people came to Scotland, I don't know. But as I lay there watching in this dreamy haze, I saw that deer come forward. It was leading a woman, a shadowy woman, on a chariot behind it. She did have hops all woven through her hair, and in her hand was a whip that she was gently coaxing the deer forward with. The valerian was woven into this whip. The scent was unmistakable. I watched, and then just as she passed, a little like the fairy queen, maybe, I got up to follow. She found her way up, onwards past the black pond, past the beech trees, up the path, past the castle, to where the Romans had a fort. And there she vanished. But in the cave below the ridge where the Roman fort met the back of the beech woods was a figure, a stone figure surrounded by other tiny stone figures. Maybe the Caiach, maybe her husband, the Bodach, the old man and old woman, the grandmother and grandfather of Scottish mythology, surrounded by the dreams that they formed. I went back out. Well, had I been dreaming? I couldn't tell you. The scent of valerian was still so strong in the air. But I think I'd found a connection. And when I'd wandered around to see if this mysterious hop-dressed figure with a valerian whip was still there, or maybe there was evidence of a deer down by the black pool in the beech trees, I couldn't find a thing. So I took my pen and my paper and I wrote her in. Hertha, the Earth Mother. The lost figure, maybe, of the Scottish mythology, or maybe one manifestation, maybe one of her sisters. I don't know, because Scotland is an island nation, and we've always heard stories from other places. These are not boundaries, these are silvery roads. Seas have invited travellers in, and our mythology and our legends blend. So I think that maybe she is one of the lost figures of Northern European mythology, found a new home, woven in with that invisible mother figure. And I think there are a few more stories about her to find out. But for now, she's just my connecting soul, travelling with valerian and hops. And I mean, who wouldn't dream on valerian? It's a wonderful herb for dreaming on, and I'm sure that when you dream, some of those stories have a little essence of truth.
Amazing. Thank you so much. And unbeknownst to you, you actually picked the next herb in our list to be released, which is, of course, hops, which is a very heady, and I didn't tell you that before, so you would never have known that. But valerian hops, you're right, that heavy, soporific. What a beautiful story. Thank you so much. And thank you for giving us your time today and sharing your stories and your thoughts around herbal storytelling. Everything went very quiet, and everyone, you can't see this, listeners, but everybody literally leaned in to their camera to get a bit closer and to hear, to be part of that story. So now we need to go to a commercial break, but please stay with us for the rest of the show, Amanda. We're going to be meeting my herbal hero of the week next. Maybe you have a thought on that one. We'll have thoughts from Evie on the discussion today, and Vincent's going to give us his final thoughts on the day as well. So we will be back right after this.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a people and plant dialogue hosted by Sophie.Health on UK Health Radio. And now it's time for our Herbal Hero of the Week. So last time we talked about the spring herb Galium aparine, or Sticky Willy as it's known in much of the UK, and how it's a great partner to nettle, which we talked about in the programme with Mo Wild and just there with Amanda, and how it's one of the iconic plants of spring. So here's another well-known spring plant this week, and it is the humble dandelion. So there's lots of posts around at this time of year urging people to save the dandelions because they're early food for the bees, which is quite true. But I wonder if you know just how useful they can be as food and as medicine. So the leaves are a really great spring green, and they can be eaten in salad. The root, which is harvested in autumn, can be used to make dandelion coffee, and that's something you can buy in health food stores as well. The flowers can be used to make a dandelion syrup, which these days is now known as vegan honey, spelled H-U-N-N-Y, and which we love making in my family. It's a really, really simple recipe, and I usually post it on my social media pages around springtime, so keep an eye out for that on at Pamela Spence Herbalists. The ancients used this system of classification really for herbs that aligned them with astrological entities, and it helped us to characterize and memorize their actions, which is a bit like storytelling in a way that Amanda has been talking to us about. And the dandelion is the only plant that is ruled by three entities. It's ruled by the sun, which is the flower, of course. It's ruled by the moon, which is the seed head, and the stars are the floating seeds themselves. And who doesn't remember making a wish on a dandelion as a child? So medicinally, we tend to concentrate on the leaf and the root, although actually, if you split the stem, there's a latex in there, a white milky sap that does have some antiviral components, so you can paint those onto warts on your hands and things like that. But mainly, also you can use it to make temporary tattoos, like my son really loves to do. So we call it the tattoo plant in our family. So the leaf supports detoxification via the kidneys. So it makes you pee more, basically, which is hence the French name pis-en-lit, or the old English pee the bed. And granted, you don't really want to take dandelion leaf tea just before bedtime because you will be up to the loo in the night. But it does act as a really great diuretic therapy, which is often used to help lower blood pressure. So the pharmaceutical alternative to this is often called a water tablet. You may have heard of that, or a diuretic. The clever thing about dandelion is that pharmaceutical diuretics often come with a loss of potassium, which is a problem because potassium is really critical for your heart health. So dandelion leaf, though, has so much potassium in it that even after you've peed out all that extra potassium, you can still end up with a net gain of potassium, which is something that the pharmaceutical diuretics don't have about them. So, of course, I'm not telling you to suddenly give up your prescription diuretics here, everybody. Be very sensible, but see a medical herbalist if you would like some help in this area. So the root is a different medicine altogether. You really don't want to mix the two up. So the leaf is working through the kidneys and the bladder. But the root, not only is it a prebiotic, so it feeds your gut microbiome, but it's also a liver tonic and a very gentle laxative. So the leaf works on the bladder and kidneys, the root on the bowel to very gently get things moving. Both are a wonderful spring tonic, but of course you would be taking the preserved roots at this time of the year, but the fresh leaf. And the easiest way to do it is just go out, find a patch of dandelions that you know are clean, so not near to a road, no dogs being around there. Pick the dandelion leaf and just drop some into your salad bowls this spring, and it will do you a lot of good. Amanda, have you got any quick facts you'd like to share about dandelion from a storytelling point of view?
Absolutely. I love dandelion. It's absolutely one of my favourite herbs. I mean, I'm my birthday's coming up in the next few weeks, and so it's a really big plant for me. Yeah, I would love, I love that you picked up on telling the time in fairyland when you blow the seeds. And that actually goes back to a really old Scottish belief. I mean, everyone knows about that Scotland used to be heavily populated with the fae, the fairy folk. And in fact, there are hills near where I live where the fairies are said to have taken people inside the hill, never to be seen again. But so populous, so many were the fae at one point that people tried to hurt them. They tried to get rid of them. They tried trampling them underfoot. And the fairies took to clothing themselves in green and getting smaller and smaller, trying to stay out of sight of people. But they still cared for people and still wanted to be part of our lives and helped us. So they started to disguise themselves as dandelions. They're still there. If we choose to treasure them, we can still seek a little bit of their magic. But now they hide in clear sight. So I love the idea that the reason we can tell the time in fairyland by blowing those star-like seeds into the air is because there's a little essence of fae still left in the humble dandelion. It is a little healing bit of magic, fairy person in plain sight that's there to give us a gentle helping hand.
Right outside my window where I work now, my clinic room, it's usually full of dandelions. They're not quite up yet because it's been so cold, but I'm going to really enjoy looking out on them even more this year. Thank you, Amanda.
You're welcome.
Evie, time for our pioneer reflections. Love to hear your thoughts on today's discussion and stories that we've been told.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, firstly, wow, the storytelling was incredible. It did not disappoint. You know, like I said at the beginning, this is what I was really interested in. I was like kind of confused as to what it really like entailed. But as soon as you started telling the story that you did, I was just completely transported somewhere else. I don't even know where, but I couldn't think about making notes. I was just like, I need to hear this story. It was incredible. Really, you have such an essence about you when you can tell a story that it's so real, it's so believable. Like, it felt like I was watching you transport into, like, something. Like, you know, we were sat here having our interview, and then as soon as you started going into this story, you got so expressive and so, oh, it was just beautiful to watch. It was amazing. It was very, very fascinating. So thank you for that. And then during our chat, you kind of really opened my eyes to the possibility of what storytelling can do, because, you know, at kind of 17, I'm thinking, okay, storytelling, it means reading a book to your kids to make them go to sleep. Like, that's just kind of what came to my mind. So I was like, okay, what has this got to do with plants? But, you know, the idea of sensations, bringing people together, there's so much in just a simple story. I was just like, oh wow, there really can, you can do a lot with a story, and you really showed me that, so thank you. It was incredible.
Oh, thank you, Evie. That's such a lovely reflection, and I'm really glad that you enjoyed the story. I think we all need a bedtime story to help us get to sleep sometimes.
I was just saying to everybody before we came back on air that the first time, because I knew Amanda as a herbalist, the first time I ever saw her in this new role of, I hadn't seen her for a few years, of storytelling, herbal storyteller, was we had a camp for herbalists, and it's in the woods at night, and we were all sitting around the campfire, all these herbalists, and Amanda emerged from the woodland. We were all saying, because we hadn't seen her for ages, and told this story by campfire light. I think it was the story of the wolf peach. And it was just the most magnificent thing I'd ever experienced. It was just so fabulous. So I'm really glad that everybody listening and you guys here got a chance to experience a little bit of that today. Vincent, some final thoughts from you?
Yeah, well, I mean, as I said, you know, in between, like on the commercial breaks, it's very interesting for me because, you know, gosh, yeah, you don't really hear a story after your childhood in a way. Right. Occasionally you will see a program, you know, on TV, right, where someone has a book and they tell a story and it very quickly then goes into the program or something like that. But to actually, you know, yeah, have another human to tell you a story, right, is such a long time ago. And it's actually, yeah, a real experience, which is quite interesting. Right. It's an experience that I haven't experienced in a very long time. So thank you so much, Amanda. It was really interesting to kind of reconnect with that. And yeah, like Evie said, you can understand the strength of that. And similar to, when you're thinking about what you're, going to do, Evie, in psychology and in counseling and all of that, you can also see that stories could really, be very helpful going through
Sure.
that. And lastly, my last thought, Amanda, was like, gosh, wouldn't this be amazing for a comic book as well, right? Where you can actually have really show all of the different, herbs and plants that you're talking about. So we can maybe recognize them when we actually, go out and then remember the stories. That
I
kind of
think that
came.
would be it would be amazing. And I think picking up on what you said about community building, it is that whole thing of maybe at one point everyone had stories before we had TV, before we had the internet. And it is that maybe every community needs a storyteller as well as a herbalist. Because I think that the stories just really do bring people together. So it's been lovely hearing all your feedback. Thank you so much for inviting me on.
I think it's something that it links to something very primeval in us, I think, because before there was the printing press, if we're going back and something about reconnecting people and plants, which is what we talk about on this show and what we're interested with in Sophie, but doing it in a way that's fit for the modern world, we have been connected to the plants forever. If you go back far enough, that's what Amanda and I do every day, but for everyone listening, for you guys, Vincent and Evie on the call, it's like that connection existed. It's remembering it. So in that, take that word apart, remembering, taking it back into yourself, remaking a connection to the fact that our ancestors would have been that connected. But also, as ancient as the plants are storytelling. And quite often when you look back in cultures, I feel like the storytellers and the sort of the healers or the shamans or the people that held the secrets and the people that held the knowledge and passed it on, there is a huge overlap there between the plants and the stories. And that's why we find, we don't have these kind of stories about paracetamol. We don't have these kind of stories about, about whatever drug, about furosemide or an antidepressant or a whatever. We don't have them. And that goes back to what Stephen Dahmer was talking about, wasn't it? It was about, when you connect with the plant in the community and all the history, the shared history and culture and importance that it has, it's a whole different level of healing to taking a pharmaceutical drug,
I think it's interesting that you mentioned that connection with pharmaceuticals because they have single action and plants have this whole sort of pantheon of actions. And for me, the story and the words we've collected and woven over years in the folklore is another one of the plant's actions. And it's a little maybe more subtle and less visible in a scientific arena because when you unpick it all and you diagnose the constituents. But there's this whole ether, if you like, this whole mystery that we don't necessarily have as visible that's there as well. So I love that analogy. It's brilliant. Thanks, Pamela, for that one. So I got
Amazing.
hold that one.
Yeah. And thank you so much for being with us, Amanda. So we've all here been lucky enough to get to see Amanda's absolutely beautiful book as well as hearing her tell her stories. We'd highly recommend going to her website, which is botanicafabula.co.uk, to get yourself a copy of the Time Traveller's Herbal and to see all of her online offerings. That's botanicafabula.co.uk. If you'd like to buy it via the website, then you get a signed copy. With parcels of herbs and beautifully put together, or you've got links to buy in other places as well. So thank you, Amanda. Next week, we're looking forward to welcoming back our very own Dr. Nikki O'Brien. She's going to talk us through some of the considerations that went into building the Sophie app and why they were so important. And we're going to be looking at journaling at community, continuing on with this same thread here, and peer support as actual healing modalities that we really often underestimate. So just before we go, a quick reminder of the special portal we've created for UK Health Radio listeners to join Sophie, which is join.sophie.health/radio, and you'll find everything you need there, including the discount code Radio50 to take 50% off the price of a Sophie pod. So please do check it out. We would love to have you with us. So that's it for us from today, where we look forward to being back with you live on Monday at 3 p.m. UK time.